Hello, and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kavit Ahvai. The war on Syria has been marked by considerable advancements by the Syrian army since the liberation of al-Husayr, much to the ire of countries supporting the insurgents. While the United States has backed off from their announcement initially of military support, the newly appointed Saudi-linked president has promised military supplies from Saudi Arabia to the insurgents, along with Qatar. In this debate, we're going to discuss whether that would change the balance of power or not, along with recent political developments.
Syrian troops continued their advance into insurgent-held regions in parts of the country. The Syrian army had steadily been making gains against the foreign-backed Takfiri elements since regaining control of the strategic town of Qusair near Lebanon's border last month. This has prompted the U.S. and other supporters of the militants to step up their efforts to reverse the tide which has turned in favor of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Meanwhile, an American senator has called for military strikes by the U.S. and its allies in the Middle East against the Arab nation. Senator Carl Levin says such attacks are the only way to end the Syrian conflict. This is the latest attempt by American politicians to push the White House into intervening in Syria. Levin is also among the staunch supporters of the idea of U.S. arming insurgents in Syria. He says he would even support providing heavy weapons to the militants. This while numerous opinion polls have shown that an overwhelming majority of American people are against their country's involvement in Syria. American anti-war activists have held protest rallies in New York City and Los Angeles against the growing U.S., NATO, and Israeli interference in Syria.
Ultimately, this is a government that is bent on doing this all over the region. Any independent country, any country that stands up and says, our resources belong to the people of this country, they are targeted for destruction. We saw it with Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya. We're seeing it now with Syria.
We have to do something and stand up because Obama's not going to do it. What's he going to do? He's going to give us more drones, kill more innocent people around the world. The Senate, the Democrats, and the Republicans aren't going to do it.
The U.S. and its Western allies, including Britain, have openly called for regime change in Syria many times. Their Arab allies in the Middle East, namely Saudi Arabia and Qatar, have been supplying advanced weapons to the insurgents. But there are serious doubts, even among Western observers, that increased efforts by the anti-Syrian front will reverse the situation on the ground.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Debate. From London, we have Haytham Sabahi. He's from the Syrian Social Club, who joins us. And senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, Richard Weitz, joins us from Washington. I'd like to welcome our guests. Let me start with you, Haytham Sabahi, and talk about the opposition, the Syrian National Coalition. The SNC underwent a series of shifts in its leaderships. Your thoughts on the new president, Ahmad Jarba, the third president since the party was founded 2 years ago, with close connections with Saudi Arabia?
First of all, it's good evening to you and to your viewers. I mean, the change, what's happened with the CNC, all these changes is just a picture or a front picture. The point is the coalition or the SNC is made out of a group. Each small group is loyal to one country. Some of them are loyal to Saudi Arabia, others to Qatar, some to United States, others to Britain. So there is no one group. Well, as the Syrians or Syrian, also the Syrian government is searching for a group inside the opposition are loyal to Syria. But most of these groups are loyal to other countries or to other agendas. Some of them, as we know, the Takfiris, who belong to Al-Qaeda and other Islamic fundamentalists. So there is a stalemate there. There is no belief what the SNC is going to come out. It's just wish-wash. The point is, these groups are not disjointed, are not united. They follow the agendas of their masters. So nobody really is banging on them to come out with a solution at all after all these months. except is disunity and carrying out the agenda to destroy the infrastructure in Syria, and they try to topple the government by guns or mm-hmm. by fight, which they are not able to. Now they met in Istanbul last week to lift the morals of their fighters on the ground, because it's apparent they're losing quite a lot of ground, and the Syrian army is advancing every day. Today in Homs, in the next few days going to be in Aleppo. The suburb of Damascus is in a better situation. For Syria, and as a whole Syria, government, army, security operators, and the people, we have no other solution except to fight this right to the end, to bring stability and security to Syria. And no one should doubt that the resolve of the Syrian people and Syrian government is going to stand for this till they win against this horrible attack carried out by other countries against the Syrian sovereignty.
Well, Richard Weitz, what do you think here? We have this SNC, according to our guests there, depending on which figures you speak to, and I'm going to talk about some of the prominent ones and their loyalty, in essence, to the countries involved, which our guests talked about, the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. I mean, we're talking 2 days later after the appointment of this new president. You have Ghassan Hitto, who's the U.S. businessman, elected a prime minister. Well, he offered his resignation. I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record, but his frustration, he stated, was in failing to form a fully-fledged opposition government. With this split very apparent now, with the different factions within the opposition group, doesn't this failure really mean that there's no unified opposition? And the whole group, it's not democratically elected. How can there be any hopes of the countries backing this SNC to be the future of what's in store for Syria?
The criticisms are valid that the opposition has had difficulties agreeing on a uniform candidate and rallying support around that person, such that he can then be strong enough to make the kind of maybe concessions you would need to see a peace agreement. This is not uncommon. It's often the case, and there's even it's even known in the social science phenomenon as exile politics, that when the people out of power. We saw this with the Bolsheviks. We saw this with the Iranian revolutionaries before Khomeini came back to power. When you're in exile, you don't have much power, so you can be irresponsible. You can fight over principles to the detriment of the movement. Often, though, when you come into office, you're forced to deal with realities, and that forces you to compromise. Now, the criticism about the fact that the opposition is not democratically accountable is accurate, but there's no way to solve that, since you can't hold an election in Syria at the moment. You could maybe hold it among the Syrians in Turkey, or for example, but then that would still not be representative. So this is a problem. They're hoping to work with the opposition. There's also the problem that there's probably some differences between the political opposition and the insurgent movement, particularly some of the field commanders, appear to hold more radical views. That will have to be reconciled. So we have a lot of problems, but this is often the case in these kind of situations in which you have a civil war with one of the groups predominantly based in exile.
Well, let me ask you this, Haytham Sabai. You made an interesting point, and I'm not too sure what you meant by that, if you can clarify and elaborate more on. And you said that the Syrian government is looking within the SNC, if I understood you correctly, to see if there's any way that there are figures or officials within the SNC worthy enough for the Syrian government to sit down and have talks with. Are there any indications that there are such figures for the Syrian government to consider having talks? And I'm assuming you're alluding perhaps to the Geneva II talks that are coming up, if they are going to indeed be even to happen in the future?
Well, let's say, first of all, the SNC, they don't represent.
That's for Haytham Sabai. Haytham Sabai, go ahead.
Let me say, first of all, the SNC, they don't represent the whole opposition. There are a bunch of people who lived outside the countries, and even through the opposition in Syria, they don't have a support, and nobody knows how much support they have on the ground. This is a group made out of Muslim Brotherhood and some other businessmen who has an interest, they want to destroy the Syrian government. And of course, they worked with other side or with other countries who has an interest to topple the Syrian government, like United States and others. But there is one point. When I said the Syrian government is looking for someone, it is not looking to talk to the opposition. If there is an opposition, to have for those opposition to have a leadership. There is no leader between this type of opposition. I mean, first of all, we have Mr. Galyoun after Muaz al-Khatib, Hito didn't last, and now Jarba is just members or some figures being appointed by other countries. Let's say, I mean, and I'll say this is to your guest, maybe he doesn't know thing. Mr. Jarba being elected because he is backed by the Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia now is the strongest between the countries who are pushing after the role of the Qatari government being demised. So now the Saudi Arabia taking the control, of course they have to appoint someone who they believe and trust. Exactly how United States appointed Ghassan Hito in one point, and he didn't do anything at all. Well, all the Syrians, including the Syrian government, they want an opposition. Of course, when there is a good opposition, I must say, with a program and full program for the Syrian people and for the country, which I haven't seen till now. There is none of this opposition has a program how to solve this crisis, except they say killing and backing fighting and backing bombing and ally themselves with this country or others to get some money or backhanders and stay in 5-star hotels. This is not the type of opposition we want. We want an opposition who has a leadership with a full program working for Syria and for the Syrian people, which is the Syrian government also, I must say, looking and searching for such a people.
Very well. It's interesting to find out if there's a real winner in this case when we talk about the war in Syria. And some of the viewer comments were great, in which this particular viewer comments, as posted on our Facebook page, indicated as such. Let's listen to what he had to say.
There is no winner in Syria, as the country is getting devastated by the ongoing fighting between the foreign-backed insurgents and the government. The Qataris and Saudis have failed to topple the Assad government in a short time, and the army is winning the war decisively. I think the West has won the game in destroying Syria, spreading violence to Lebanon, and deepening sectarian rift among Muslims for the benefit of Israel. The situation in Syria is getting worse as the two superpowers, the US and Russia, are gaming in the country for their interests. Both pay no attention to the humanitarian crisis or the killing of innocents on a daily basis. Syrians must wake up and stop all kind of foreign intervention and hold talks for the sake of their country and its coming generations.
A couple of your comments there worthy of getting a reaction from our guests, especially the first one, which I'm going to come to you, Richard Weiss. I'm going to go with the last sentence of this particular viewer who said, I think the West has won the game in destroying Syria, spreading violence to Lebanon, deepening sectarian rift among Muslims for the benefit of Israel. Your reaction?
Well, from the point of view of Israel, what's been happening in Syria and Egypt and Lebanon, it's not clear what outcome would best benefit them. I mean, they seem to feel comfortable working with Assad. He'd been around for a while, as well as his father. They'd worked out a modus vivendi. The new opposition, it could be better from the point of view of Israel, but it could be worse. I mean, if you have an al-Qaeda regime there, traditionally, al-Qaeda has not been focused on Israel, but having a regime bordering Israel might actually reorient that focus. So I'm not sure what Israel best benefits them. And from the point of view of the West in general, This has all been a bit of a distraction, which is why nobody wants to send their troops in to intervene. I mean, it's not an urgent, major national security, critical national security issue if Assad stays in power or leaves. I mean, they've dealt with him before. If he stays in power, they can deal with him in the future. It's not like Iranian or North Korean nuclear weapons. It's not an existential issue, and therefore, it's not clear to me why people would think that the West has a particular strong interest in seeing the fighting continue. I mean, if anything, as I said, it's distracting from the areas which they consider of higher priority.
But furthermore, Haytham Sabahi, this has been brought up many times by different analysts, and I'd like to find out why it is that many are thinking that the West wants to continue this destruction that's happening in Syria. And at the same time, there's this program of deepening a sectarian rift among Muslims. Do you agree that that is something that the West is seeking by the situation that's occurring there in Syria?
I mean, if you look at what's happened the last 10 years before 2011, Syria was on the right path. Has a good economy, no outside debt, a strong army, investments coming in, the country getting better and better, self-sufficient, and of course was backing Hezbollah and backed Hezbollah in the 2006 war, backed Hamas in 2008, and is the country who is standing in the Middle East against Israel and against Zionism. So this is why the plan was there to take that country out of the equation. I mean, who will benefit out for what's happening in Syria? Except the Israelis and the Zionists, and it's, presented by United States and others. Just tell me, this is Al-Qaeda joke your guest says from Washington. I mean, the point is, how a member of Al-Qaeda could come to Turkey, to Istanbul, land in the airport, get a visa, travel to the south of Turkey, trained, get weapons, and I must say, Turkish weapon or weapons is provided and covered by United States, other arrived in Turkey, get these weapons, cross the border, and come to Syria. And you're telling me all the intelligence of so-called this free world and United States and Britain didn't know Mr. Belhaj arrived to Istanbul and he was on the border with Syria, didn't know all these Al-Qaeda's came to Turkey and traveled by aircraft and landed in Istanbul airport. I mean, this is a cover-up. What the United
well,
States
let's,
decide,
let's get a reaction there. I'm sorry, let's get a reaction. Richard White, your reaction to what Haytham Sabahi said there about the different points that he made.
The Turks have a bit of their own agenda in this. There's been tension between Ankara and Washington over perhaps Turkey's willingness to work with what people in Washington consider Sunni extremists. And this is something that they've been trying to work out. So I don't know whether what the guests said, what happened and how accurate that was, but presuming it is, then I would be skeptical that this is something that Washington wanted to see happen. I believe there are groups in Turkey that feel more sympathetic towards more militant, radical forms of Sunniism. And that's perhaps how this person managed to make his way through Turkey into Syria.
Very well. Then what is your reading on another scale about the U.S. position in terms of a couple weeks back, President Obama said that we're going to arm the insurgents. Then at this point, they're rethinking that position, I guess. And along with that, American Senator Carl Levin, who came out and said, well, there should be military strikes by the U.S. and the regional allies. You're reading into that.
Well, I think that that is reflecting the genuine debate in the United States over the fact that it's not clear what is the best solution from the U.S. point of view in terms of dealing with the Syrian opposition. The ideal outcome would be a replacement of the current government with a broader-based government. You see a democratic transition. You see a reorientation of the country's foreign policy, reduction in defense spending, moving closer towards the West, et cetera. I don't know how you get that. It would require a lot of things to go right. The worst outcome would be you overthrow somebody you don't like, that is Mr. Assad, and you end up with a regime that's even worse, an al-Qaeda-dominated regime, which then spreads terrorism throughout the Middle East. That's the outcome they definitely want to avoid. Between those two, it's difficult. You know, you arm the insurgents, well, that increases the pressure on Assad to maybe compromise, but it also increases the risk of having an al-Qaeda-dominated regime. And that's why I think the administration for so long was reluctant to arm the rebels. They just weren't sure whether that would have a net benefit to the United States or a worse one. And there's also the point I made earlier about it's not a really crucial interest for the United States what happens in Syria. I mean, it's important for Turkey in particular. It's important for regional stability. But whatever the outcome is, within bounds, it wouldn't make a major difference. Mm. An al-Qaeda-dominated regime, though, would present serious challenges. So that's probably what they want to avoid. So if you press them, I think they would be willing to support the insurgents and the political opposition up to a point when they started thinking it would be counterproductive in the sense you maybe increase the risk of an al-Qaeda-dominated regime. Now, different people will draw that line differently, and I think that's why you see a debate going on in the Senate. You cited Senator Levin. You could cite McCain, but you can cite many other senators and members of the House who oppose any kind of intervention in the part of the U.S.
You're talking about a different take on that. I mean, Haytham Sabahi, I mean, there you have your guests talking about how the United States is mulling this over, but the concrete evidence, we had the New York Times come out, this was back in March, about CIA involvement in weapons deliveries. At that point, 160 cargo flights by Jordanian, Saudi Arabian, and Qatari military-style cargo planes with the knowledge of the CIA. You have a guest there that says the U.S. is mulling this over. Are they doing that or putting this on the public stage to convince Americans that they're actually thinking it, where in reality there are many, and there's testament to it, that these insurgents are being armed, whether it's by the U.S., with the U.S. knowledge, or with the U.S. weapons, or through Saudi Arabia and Qatar, et cetera. Why is there this game then being played on the world stage in the way U.S. is presenting itself when it comes to arming insurgents?
I mean, let me say something, and I will be very clear here. If United States don't want its puppets, I mean, like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, to announce what they're announcing, United States can tell Saudi to shut up. I mean, very clear, because these countries, they're carrying out the agendas of United States and Britain. That's one thing. And you telling me, I mean, nobody can believe members of Al-Qaeda going around Angelica base in the south of Turkey is the biggest NATO base, and they train around that base to enter Syria. And without United States knowing, without Britain knowing, this is a joke. This is impossible. I mean, United States every day sending the drones to say in Yemen or in other country to bomb. Sometimes, many times they make a big mistakes and they bomb a family or a wedding. And they don't know these people are trained outside the biggest NATO base in Turkey, or United States has no power to tell Turkey Qaeda members or Islamic members, who they are, by the way, killing and maiming, and there is many videos, cutting heads and killing women and arming children, using children as a shield right in the front, and sending children to battle with the Syrian army. United States don't know all this issue.
I'm sorry, I have to jump in because we're fresh out of time.
Knows more than me and more than your guest, I believe.
I apologize. Thank you very much for that. From London, Haytham Sabahi there. He's from the Syrian Social Club. Thank you. We had Richard Weitz, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, talking to us from Washington. From Mikhail Tavoyan, the entire team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.